and welcome to The Underground, the official podcast partner of Glee 2025. I'm Phil Wright, and together with my co-host Kate Turner, we took our podcast booth to the Glee show in Birmingham to capture a snapshot of the industry and take the pulse of what's going on in the garden sector right now. As well as recording 20 interviews, Kate and I ventured out of our recording booth to gain some insights from exhibitors on the show floor. If you've been working in the garden sector for a while, you no doubt already know how special it is. The support from trade associations, colleagues, and peers across the industry can be invaluable. In this episode, we catch up with Nat Boynton and Meg Warren Davis from the YPHA as the industry celebrates the culmination of their Launch Success Challenge. And we also hear what initiative they have coming next. We also chat with Kaz Edwards of Heart of Eden about the support she received earlier this year. We are here this morning with Natalie Boynton and Megan Warren Davis. Thank you very much both for you for joining us. You're both members of the YPHA. It's absolute pleasure to have you both on.
Thank you very much for having us.
You've both been on before, so friends of the show, which is great. What are you both hoping to take away from Glee this year?
We're here today with a really important purpose, really, which is to graduate our 10 delegates from our Launch Success Challenge. It's really exciting to have such a platform to do that and to celebrate their success and the success, hopefully, of the programme. So I think that's the main thing for us today is to help more people find out what we've been doing and celebrate what has been achieved, because it's been a real journey. And this was always sort of the line in the sand of where we would finish it up. So I think it's nice to get to that finish line.
Yes, definitely. To see their progress has been amazing over a year that they've been working on this project, and just see the final pieces come together and see the development of everyone's like journeys in creating a new product has been amazing.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Launch Success Challenge. So we had Beth Anderson on the podcast, and she told us all about the experience from a delegate's point of view. But what was your vision for the programme when you first created it?
So, YPHA, when we started YPHA, coming up 6 years ago now, one of the things that Molly, Liam and I all felt was that the industry is very good at finding people that like plants and teaching them more about plants.
Yes.
But in the meantime, and you guys all know this really well, there's so many other things that are integral to what we do and are a huge obstacle to making the progress the industry needs to make that we're just expected to figure out for ourselves.
Yeah.
So we sort of grouped those into little pockets, and this project came about as a way to combat quite a lot of them, to light a fire and raise awareness of these things that we weren't teaching people. Photography, fonts, you know, we had a whole half day session with Jenny Kwan from Hive, part of the Glee family, parent of the Glee, the Glee trade show, and about like if you use a sans serif font versus a serif font, and you know, we went into a lot of detail very quickly on a lot of things. But touched a lot of bases in the hope that people can figure out which bits they thrived at and then hopefully open their minds to horticulture is not just dirt under the nails. It might be how to frame a photograph. It might be how to write a press release. Christ, we've made them write a lot of press releases. But, you know, those things like when you're launching a product, like write your own press release.
Really,
you know,
valuable skills.
Yeah. So it was sort of a way to link that together into something that was fun as well. Sort of an apprentice style approach, I guess, to launching the product. And thanks to the support, especially from Barley, we were able to bring Meg on the journey with us.
Right.
And Meg's been documenting it.
When you say the help from Barley, I'm not talking about the country. Who are we talking about?
No, the British Association of Landscape Institute, so the trade association for landscapers. When we first said that we were going on this journey and we'd had sponsorship for the delegates, I said I just really wish that we could be taking more. And Wayne, who is an absolute hero for YPHA, Wayne from Barley, said that he would help contribute the funds to add Meg's name to the list of people. So Meg's been every step of the journey with us filming it.
Right. So tell us what that experience was like, Meg.
It was amazing. I'm so, so grateful that I've been able to come through on this journey, because I've learned so much even just by watching all of the delegates go through this process. So I've had experience in all of these rooms, like going to Flora Media and seeing about branding, how that's helped me in my own career. And then in the terms of like the documenting side of it, learning more into editing and videography and really developing those skills as well.
Okay.
But yeah, just to see the transformation on camera, those initial interviews with the delegates, all the way to the BBC Gardeners World Live where it was launched, has been, you know, it's amazing to see the before and afters. You put the footage side by side and it's amazing how far they've come. And I'm just so grateful that I've been able to be part of that journey.
So your role in your day-to-day job is social media, is that right? Is that still there? Or
I do my own social media.
Right.
Around houseplants.
Yes.
So I do make videos around that.
Yeah.
Tends to be more short form, but this
right.
is more of a documentary style.
Right.
And then I do work in marketing as my day job.
Right.
So it like kind of congeals everything together.
Oh, amazing.
And you were able to get the time off to do the things that you needed to do?
Yeah, so I'm hugely grateful for my previous workplaces. They've been able to grant me some time off to go and support the YPHA and, you know, being really flexible with time off. And
yeah, because, I mean, that's a really big thing. You know, you can't do it without the support of the people
employers.
Yeah, yeah. So no, that's really good to hear. So it was a big step to take to do the run the Launch Success Programme. What was it that encouraged you to take such a this bold, real-world approach to the programme?
So when we first wanted to do YPHA, back before we actually did it, we asked one of the big industry organisations if they could take it under their remit, and they said it wasn't a priority.
Right.
And then I think that lit a fire that young people should be a priority. And again, we appealed, and Lily Matthews and I wrote out a detailed proposal for what was the first version of Launch Success.
Mm-hmm.
And we applied for funding from a well-resourced industry body.
Right. Okay.
They said it didn't align with their priorities. So we took a step back, we'd already worked out for that program how much it was going to cost, how much money we'd need,
right.
and it felt insurmountable.
Yeah.
And then Boyd being Boyd, gosh, that guy, the things we all owe that guy for the guidance he's given us in our careers, said, well, you just put out an article saying that you know you're looking for funding. And on the first phone call we got back from, you know, we want to do this project, but we need to raise this money, was Peter Moore. Old Troisia breeder from Hillier Heritage.
Yep.
And he said, I'll be your main sponsor and put up a good chunk of the funds.
That's
I cried.
So good.
I had a little, oh, I know, I was so emotional because so many people hadn't thought that it was worth or one group of people hadn't thought it was worth supporting or it didn't align with their priorities or whatever. So, and then once Peter signed on and we had that sort of bulk, we knew that through the project we would be able to generate some funds because there's a rebate on the sales of the item as a condition of signing with a partner. So BGC this time gave a sort of a surcharge on each item, which has come back.
Yeah.
So we knew at that point that we were going to get a chunk back at the end.
Yeah.
So Molly said, right, well, worst case, we self-fund, and at the end, that money regenerates what we've used on the way through.
Right.
But it wasn't necessary.
Didn't need to do that.
No,
brilliant.
So,
brilliant.
Some brilliant bodies. I'm really scared to try and name them in case I miss somebody, but the BPOA is up there. Bacon Camp themselves, Flora Media were a big part of it. You know, the Westland put in a good chunk.
Right.
Again, the GCA sponsored our minibus around the Netherlands. it was piecemealed. Every little vote of confidence just made it. I was so determined we needed to do this project.
Yeah.
Because we've lit a fire under 10 people, but once Meg's had 1,000 hours to edit all the documentary footage together, hopefully we'll be able to amplify it further. But we've drawn attention to the fact that those are underappreciated areas.
Mm-hmm.
And then as it happens, because we had the funds up front, the funds that have come back at the end of the project is what we've rolled on and put together this management training.
Yeah.
So the project sort of not only supported the 10 in it and all of the people that see Meg's documentary, but also is now putting another 12 through a different version of Let's Not Teach People More About Plants.
Right.
So when are you hoping the documentary will be ready?
No pressure. Honestly, I understand that pressure.
Yeah, understand all the editing process. Yeah. I created a 5-minute onboarding video, not for YPHA, but for another project. And that took me 12 hours to do. That was 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
It depends like how high quality, and I really, really want this to be one of the best pieces of video that I've put together, because it really needs to be amplified and give an example to maybe hopefully future iterations of the Launch Success Challenge, of what can be achieved and why people in the industry should support it.
Mm. Yeah.
So going back to the actual, the programme, what has surprised or impressed you the most about the two final concepts?
Oh, the concepts themselves. What we intended to do was to remove all these limitations, and you guys have experienced them. That's not how we do things. Yes. You know, we tried that in 1974 and it didn't work.
Yeah.
And you just like, the world's changed since then. Even in the last 5 years, you know, the approach to attracting new customers is so different. Mm-hmm. And I think the group whose concept was most of what went to market, where they came up with this front back label.
Yep.
Like, we've had this indoor outdoor thing for a while where we know that the plant could be used in either.
Yeah.
And that, I thought that was a real real connection, that you've got a front and a back and you can just swap it. I thought that was really cool. But the other team went on this whole colour journey where they worked out, they knew they wanted the plant to express gratitude, and they worked out what the colour palette for gratitude was.
Wow.
And that was incredible. But Meg mentioned it before, but the progress from them, there's a young girl called Molly Parkin, who that first coach trip, she wasn't feeling so well, so we should give her that, but she was she's 20, quite a little in the corner looking a little bit terrified.
Yeah.
And she spoke at Chelsea this year about careers, you know, she's come on that much.
Goodness me.
And I think as much as the product that hit the shelves, the product, don't want to call them products, but the product of success is what you'll see on the stage this afternoon, because there's been babies born, house moves, there's been life has happened, but I don't think there's one of them up there that you couldn't say is a different person to who we brought onto the program.
The program itself gave a platform for those people taking part to share their voice and their ideas.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think that actually says about the future of horticulture and young people in it?
The future's bright. The future is bright with the young people.
Yay.
And I just loved how creative these delegates were, and how that kind of represents a lot of young people coming up in the industry that maybe been stifled in their own workplaces by, that's just how we've always done it, this is just the way it is, and they're not given that movement to grow and to express their creativity. And what we've seen is that when they're given that opportunity, they can produce something amazing.
Yeah.
And they can produce something so detailed and deep and really well thought out, and come up with different strategies and stuff. So that's been...
I think one of the most tangible moments for me where I thought that's magic. We were at the breeding facility at Bacon Camp, and we were actually the last people to ever see it because they banned people seeing it. But we had booked our flights.
Wow.
So Andy Abbey, bless him, from Bacon Camp, put up quite a fight that we should be able to see it. And it's all tinted glass. And even if you work at Bacon Camp but not on that team, or you're on the Dahlia team, you can't see begonia breeding.
So it's completely top secret. That's great.
There was a really cool breeder over there, and we were chatting to him, and he was saying about he gets really frustrated because somebody said they wanted an orange begonia, and it took him 5 years to breed, by which point they didn't want an orange begonia anymore. We've got a lot of career changes on the programme. Grace works as a model in fashion. Beth used to be a makeup artist to the stars.
She didn't tell us
she's done the faces of some people that she's not allowed to tell you. She's Clue used to be a primary school teacher. You know, there's some really good leaflets from recruitment. But the fashion side of things was especially cool because they have a similar problem that if they want to make 2 million pairs of flares for 2027, they've had to already decide that.
Yep.
So then what they do is they subliminally add them, that someone on Coronation Street shows up in flares, and someone in Vogue is photographed in flares, and they twist the market to what they've already committed to creating for then.
Yeah.
And I think I don't know how to do that, but I want to do that.
Yeah, that's really sneaky.
So you know that you've got, I don't know what it is. We brought a trailing lavender out last year, and I spent months trying to come up with a marketing campaign for it smells and it's by your nose. It smells. So, you know, if you know that you've got that cool thing coming and you can manipulate the market in preparation for that cool thing coming.
Yeah.
And we should be looking at these other industries. We have been so insular. Right. And not just insular as an industry, but we've been so private as our own businesses. Yeah. And a lot of the time, we need to be working collectively as brand horticulture.
Yep.
And brand horticulture needs to be looking at fashion and social media and, you know,
just
all
taking
these
elements from all different industries and things. It's interesting. We're talking to Lee Connolly and Michael Perry, both very creative people, and they both were talking about they were doing things and then they took that idea from here and that idea from there and put them together. And I think it's the same thing. I think being able, creativity is that idea of being able to take two disparate elements and merge them together into something new.
I think the GCA have been good at it for a while. And I think, like, when obviously Liam, who's our co-founder, goes on a lot of the GCA and IGCA trips, and they go and look at scented candle factories and all sorts of things. Knitting. I always think we could take a lot of examples from how knitting's been popularized and yarn bombing and you know, those sorts of things, and open your mind a little bit is our main.
On the GCA conference last year, or earlier this year, I think it was, they went. They actually did a tour around different retail to look at the way that different things are merchandised, you know, visual merchandising, and just seeing how different department stores, not and fashion places, not garden centres, but you know, just being able to absorb that and then take that back and go, oh, well, we could do that.
Yeah.
But I think we've been saying at the podcast that the garden industry is no longer just about gardening. No, it's about so much more. You just walk around here. There's nothing to do with plants, a lot of the stands. So, we, you know, it's a no-brainer that we take all that on board and embrace it.
Definitely. Yeah, it's going to be a more cohesive unit if your plants are merchandised in a similar way to your fashion. And we did a visual merchandising session as part of the programme. And then the week after, it was a costing session. And, you know, we flipped them around and you saw, like, Liv, absolutely, Olivia Blackburn, who's now got a job as a buyer at British Garden Centres. But she's a strategic, analytical, data-driven person. And then you get the likes of Grace, where you put her in front of a camera and she was just a different person. And it's I think that's what we've tried to do, is take them on a tour and see which bits lit up each person. And I hope that they've taken that from the programme, which bits they thrived on, or the bits where they should look to place themselves.
Oh, that's really inspiring.
So you've mentioned this earlier, but off the back of the Launch Success Challenge, you've now introduced a management development programme. What led you to create this these next steps?
I think it's been in the queue for as long as long as Launch Success, but there's a heck of an undertaking to put together. And very early on in the YPHA journey, we were introduced to Lindsay Muir from Cedar Associates, who is just one of the most respected trainers in the industry. And everybody you speak to, the likes of Will Armitage, will pass before, Boyd, all the people that Adam Dunnett, right at the top of their game, if you speak to them somewhere along the way, Lindsay's put them in their place or shown them what they're capable of. Or, so we knew we wanted to do it, and we knew we wanted to do it with Lindsay. We've got our own challenges to turn YPHA into something that outlasts us.
Right, of course.
And we felt that we almost needed succession planning for ourselves as a as a group of friends, really. So, and then the idea came about that we could use the funds that came back from Launch Success, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. So that's half the cost of the programme has come back. And then Colgrave Seabrook, we've been looking for a way to work with them for a very long time, and nothing really fit. And then I was at a Hillier conference back at the start of the year, and I was sat next to Adam Dunnett, and I hadn't met him before. So we looped around everybody that we had in common and came to Lindsay. And I said, I really want to do a programme where Lindsay's, you know, leading the show and showing us how to do this. And he said, well, I'll put it to CSF that you should fund it. So they've put in a quarter, and then everybody's employer has made a quarter of the original cost.
That's great.
But they've also had to commit nine days of leave for that person to attend, and travel costs.
So once again, you know, it's the businesses have, you know, being prepared to help and share in that.
When you invest in your staff, you get a lot more in return. I think that's something that they see the initial cost of it and they're like, oh, mate. But when they do that, they get people that stay. They get people wanting to work there. They get, you know, the cost of recruitment is so much. Yeah. And then just giving these people opportunities that they might not ever get in other places.
Yeah. And you've got that member of staff is hopefully going to stay and just progress through.
And if they don't stay, then the rising tide lifts all the boats. You know, as an industry, again, it's important that we can't keep having an industry where the big powers that be, the big businesses, have to pull strategists out of Pets at Home. Or, you know, we have to have people that like and care about plants and want to advocate for the integrity of the horticultural side of the industry, but also understand strategy and game plan.
I like that you said that, because there's so many managers that have come from fast moving
FMCG.
It's plants, it is different.
It is.
It really is, yeah.
Yeah, we've been intentional with the we put 12 places, and we did it that 6 could be committee. Obviously a lot of work has gone into the organisation, so that was sort of prioritised that 6 would be for committee, but 6 for wider membership. We've ended up with 7 from wider membership with a committee dropout, but there were places we've chosen from wider membership as well. We've been intentional in choosing and prioritising people that wouldn't be able to access that training. My business, we've got 50-ish team, but we'd never have 12 managers that we could put through to make a course. Yeah. So I think that's our main request for the industry, is we need to work together in piecemeal training. Because having somebody from a different context on the course will be more valuable than having 11 of you that have the same anecdote.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I can apply that to the time that so-and-so did this, but they've got a version where so-and-so did. There's businesses on there. There's 3 grower, retailer nurseries where the second generation or third generation are trying to take over from the parents.
Okay.
Similar problems to tackle. Right. So
what would you say to an employer who's on the fence about investing in this opportunity, or maybe something else, other type of training for a young person within their team?
I think it's always best to invest. That rhymes.
strap line.
Strap line. This is going to build up your own team and ultimately be valuable for you, but also for that individual. Like we said previously, the amount that it costs is small in terms of the long run. And even if that's not in your company and that's in another company, you're building up the industry. And I think that's what's so important about that. If they're worried about costs, I'm sure that they can.
We have bursaries advice within YPHA.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks to Paul Coolings in particular, we have little bits of funds to cover travel costs and things. Yeah. I think what Meg's alluding to is.
Yeah. No, that's excellent. Yeah. No, brilliant. Best to invest. Like it.
Best to invest. Yeah.
So, are there any upcoming projects, events, or partnerships you can tease for us?
So, I think we already spoke about it actually at National Plant Show, so it's more of a an update rather than a teaser, but we're working on a winter program with Barclays, which we're really excited about.
Okay.
Again, similar topic, lateral skills. The Launch Success Challenge was originally the Lateral Skills Challenge, was its working title. LSC came from both, although at one point one of the delegates called it the Lose Sleep Challenge because they made them get up early so many times. So the Barclays program's in a similar vein, how to present yourself for an interview, how to write a business plan, how to read a balance sheet. The amount of times I've sat in a boardroom and been told about EBITDA, and I'm like, I listened at school. Do you know what I mean? I don't know where I was supposed to learn about EBITDA.
They don't teach you that at school.
We are stifling the progress by just sticking to teach more about plants. Yeah. So, again, in that vein, we've got a big obstacle coming up in that we need to work towards charity status. And that's going to take a lot of time and energy. I have a really good product and a really good route to market for Launch Success 2. I just don't know that I have the operational capacity to be the glue.
Okay.
So if anybody's listening and thinks, I could, deal with any part of it, raising sponsorships, interviewing people, arranging training rooms, arranging trainers, making sure everyone's trains arrive within an hour of each other, or planes arrive.
Yeah. You know, shout out. Yeah.
Logistics are a nightmare sometimes.
But yeah, so I think it would be a real shame to let the product and the route to market sit on a shelf. But I'm just there, like, I don't know if I can do this. I've used a lot of my goodwill at my own business and and a lot of annual leave to get this together. And hopefully something will come together and somebody will say, I'll do it.
I'll take this on.
Yeah, because Launch Success 2 would be really cool.
It would be.
It's a similar spin on the same sort of concept, but with, like I say, really cool product and a really cool route to market. So
that sounds exciting.
Yep.
So I mean, brilliant news, the YPHA now has over 1,000 members. So what are some of the conversations and themes emerging from within the community right now?
So the changing of trends and like how people are buying and purchasing plants is really, really changing. And we can see that on the Discord, people deciding to talk about
okay.
it. And what is the future of buying and selling?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things is TikTok shop. So we've got, especially in the houseplant space, you can see a lot of sellers like Urban Tropicana. They've launched their TikTok shop and they're on TikTok Live a lot of days out throughout the week. And you can like watch a video. They can present the plant. They can package the plant in live, and you can comment live and you can buy plants as they're doing it. And sometimes they can come up on the screen. Some shops have that function where they can literally see so-and-so has purchased this plant and it creates that. It's like QVC, but on your
That's
phone,
I was thinking
like,
that.
Constant. And, you know, you can do thousands and thousands of sales that way because you can reach a massive audience across the UK. There are obviously different things with TikTok you've got to be aware of, such as the TikTok rules and the community guidelines and things.
Right.
And to just be aware of that they have their own rules. And at the moment, they favour the buyer. So there can be issues when it comes to lots of chargebacks, accidental and things. So that's really something to bear in mind. But
yeah, needs researching.
But this movement towards technology and towards social media and using that as creating your own market for your product, which is so important, I think. And what the houseplant community has done so well since 2020. Come up with this random plant that no one has really heard of. So there's one called Magic 8-Ball. It's got a name change and it's the Monstera that's out of Australia.
Right.
And, you know, you never think, oh, yeah, I really, really want that new interesting Monstera called Magic 8-Ball, and they've marked it in a way that everyone wants it and there's a waiting list for it, and now they've got a European supply, they've got a suppliers in the Americas, and loads of people really want it, and so there's going to be, I don't know, queues for it maybe when it does launch, when the Thai Constellation did launch in America.
But there's a speaker here at the moment, actually, Ginny, who's from TikTok. And I heard her speak yesterday, and she was saying that this creates a halo effect as well, where the same product, because they've seen it in TikTok, on TikTok. I'm not the right person for TikTok, but they then will drive to a store to buy it as well. So not only, she's basically saying you're not diluting your customer base. They're not saying I was going to drive to the garden centre, but I'll go on TikTok shop. This is a customer that you're getting as well, and quite often the incentive is there because they've seen it on TikTok. And it's like the plant labels do my head in, to be honest. I went a bit northern then, didn't I? Sorry. But plant labels, they're too long, like I too long didn't read on every plant label I've ever seen. And TikTok, you can get almost like a demonstration and a pitfall and a pros and a con.
Because you don't need to then read
and
it. Yeah.
What solution it offers to a problem that you've got or how it would fit in your room, where you put it, do you put it, you know.
I love that.
So it's like a TLDR on a label for a customer that wasn't going to come into a garden centre anyway.
You are also reaching that younger audience, just like as you said, they might not go into the garden centre or might not visit there. You're reaching such a much younger audience with that. So you, all those people that you didn't have necessarily going to your garden centre before or your nursery, they're now experiencing your product and why they should buy your product.
So that's interesting because I've heard that there's although young people are getting into houseplants, which is great, they're not necessarily coming into garden centres. So what is it? What's stopping them? And is there something that we can be doing, or the industry can be doing, to help encourage young people to get to come and visit garden centres?
I think we're getting pockets of them. Jellycat collectors, scented candle fans. I always say when we look at product design with Happy Plants is what's the thing that's going to distract somebody that was going to buy a coffee and suddenly was compelled to buy this plant? And what's the wow? And I've said for a long time that the customers we got out of COVID, they're either plant parents who are houseplant folk. We're not really going to persuade them to plant out beds of annuals. Or they're the garden decorators, people that, you know, probably painted the garden grey in COVID and had scatter cushions in their garden. And they took the Mrs. Hinch principle of what she does in the house. They didn't know how to garden, so they just Mrs. Hinched their gardens. But we've kind of worked on graduating them into people who have, you know, where there's a product for them. But we get coffee fans, we get Jellycat fans. You know, there are pockets. And it's making sure that you're making the most of those pockets of people. Christmas will be a big opportunity for that. But making sure that you stop them in their tracks and send them sideways to the plantaria.
But then also, hopefully, you've got them for life. Yeah. Because then they move somewhere where they get a garden and suddenly you get a bit older and actually, maybe it's not just about houseplants. Oh, I'm interested in this. Mm. So you get that passion early as you get older and you get more space. Because obviously one of the problems is for young people is space.
Yeah.
You've not got a garden, not got much space outside.
Yeah.
But get those people now.
Yeah, and we spoke when we first started YPHA that we felt there was a problem that the industry was just relying on people to wake up one day and want to plant rhododendrons. And I think a lot of that was in just about my generation, but not quite Meg's because she's a fair bit younger than me. We would have time in the garden with our grandparents in particular, especially my grandparents, but that's an anomaly. But, you know, everybody would have that green time as a kid, and then it was nostalgia to fall back upon as you had more time or more resources. Whereas Meg's in a bit younger, had screen time instead of green time, and then they're like not going to have it there to fall back on. But I think COVID helped us catch some of that back up, because that was a heck of a summer, wasn't it, with the weather and people being off. You know, it put a lot of people out in their gardens building those memories to fall back on. But I do think we're going to come across this issue again, where in 10 years' time, we're going to have another generation that hasn't had any
just green time.
They've just had screen time. And I think the industry needs to be aware of that and be proactive about that.
Yeah.
Because we just keep hearing, oh, there'll be more over 60s than ever in the next demographic. And you're like, well, no, that we can't just keep relying on that happening.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. I think TikTok will be a big part of that.
Yes, for sure. Getting young people into, oh, what's this? Can I grow it? And learning all of those care facts. They can actually grow a succulent. You won't just kill it. Don't worry.
It's collectability as well, though, isn't it?
Yes.
And like something being in short demand is a big marketing tactic.
And if you can get that, like a rare or unusual kind of plant that people are actively looking for in your garden centres, then young people will make the effort to drive to that place and check it out. And if you create a lovely experience for them, then they're likely to come back again and again to see what else you have to offer. So that's another entry point to...
It's like Pokemon cards. If you've got a shiny Charizard, I think that's a thing in your store. You know, there used to be with Charlie Bears before it was Jellycat. I have a customer with a tiny garden centre, but a huge Charlie Bear shop. And he would get they'd drop the rare ones with him because it would send people on like a treasure hunt.
Yeah.
It's that kind of same concept is what houseplants have done really well.
Take it from someone who's got 300 houseplants. It works. Trust me.
Oh, that's great.
But no rhododendrons yet.
No. We're going to start wrapping things up. But before we do that, Nat, I bumped into you briefly at the National Plant Show earlier this year. And you mentioned that although the good weather had been good for garden centres, this didn't necessarily translate to nurseries.
Mm.
Such as yours, Happy Plants. Can you expand on what you meant by that?
Yeah, so our crops are really fast moving. Mm-hmm. And that means that we have an amount in each window and we can't really make that more or less at short notice. We can't pause them, we can't fast forward them.
Right.
And the window of the season became so contracted. It started so early and we had the amount ready that we had. And it meant that the garden centres purchased a lot in from other avenues, the continent, other nurseries, whatever, which they're well within their rights to do. But then did the season stop? They all had a lot of stock in when things started to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We still had stock coming ready, and we had stock coming ready well into July. Last year, July was a really good sales month because they hadn't hit their targets in May last year. Whereas in May this year, they hit their targets and just seemed to play it really safe for the rest of the year, to the point that the HCA marketing review for July says garden centre footfall was up, but plant sales were down. And I think it's because they had sort of the dregs of this bit left here.
Okay.
Meanwhile, we had really, really nice plants coming ready on the nursery weekly with no real route to market.
Right.
Some really smart retailers, in my mind, obviously, made the decision to clear the dregs, had a big clearance weekend and kept everything fresh and new and exciting and had sort of a core offer each week, whereas I had other stores that said, oh, sorry, my balance sheet says that I've got too many plants, but they didn't have any colour, they didn't have any...
They were rubbish.
It's like trying to sell an advent calendar in February and saying you've got too much inventory. In February, you know, it's just It was a real shame, and we could see it happening. And certainly back in April, an article went out on Hawk Week saying, well, it started early, so it'll finish early. And you just think, thanks, that's really helpful.
Yeah.
And also not necessary, because last year, when they needed it, they needed July to hit their targets because they were so far behind from May. Whereas a mediocre May, we still sold everything. You know, they just didn't buy the chunk on top of ours. And last year they needed it, and they got on social media, they got busy, they drove the volume, they, you know, had really good offers, they they really kept it going. But we're seeing it again with autumn, unfortunately. Autumn went very early, I think, because they hadn't had anything new in for so long because their balance sheet said they had too many plants. And they bought autumn very early and then have almost run the momentum out of it a bit. But you've got customers that you've grown a heck of a lot of stuff for. And there's no contracts in horticulture.
Right.
So you grow it, it's, it's trust. And you're saying, look, you're not getting through the volumes you need to. Can we look at putting a multi-buy on? And they say, no, we need to protect our margins. Meanwhile, my margins are rotting on the nursery. Yeah. And we need to be really careful because there's already so much consolidation. There's already so many chains buying their own stores, or just grower retailers shutting down nurseries that supply people around the corner and drive around in the car boot every time they sell a shelf, you know, and they let them pick the colours are going. You can only do this if you do it on a scale. And if you do it on a scale, when you're pushing string, you're pushing string. You know, it's when you're in the crap, you're in the crap. But you can edit that bit out if I'm allowed to. When you're pushing string, you're pushing string. And you, it's really dangerous. And it's, I don't think it makes any sense because those nurseries aren't going to be there in 4 or 5 years. We take on enough risks. We take on too many risks to not have allies when we need help. And we did have allies. We had some really good allies. But there's others that you think, when you're looking at producing stuff for them for next year, you think, well, we're looking after them in that bit where they got the chance to make all that money. And then they just left us to for ourselves. It leaves a bit of a sour taste. The main take home from it, it's not about me and my nursery, it's about this industry needs a safe supply of UK plants. And it's a bit like with farming, nobody's setting up a new farm. You've got the nurseries you've got, they're consolidating, they're getting bigger. But they're getting bigger because families like us and like the Allensmore guys are, you know, putting a lot of risk on the line, a lot of money on the line to grow, to fulfill the need that's there for the product. But We can't just do it for the fun. We don't do it for fun, you know.
No.
Well, we do.
It's a business. It's a business.
The love of it doesn't pay the bills.
No.
And
it's commercial realities.
Definitely. And I think that it can be quite short-sighted to stop buying to protect your own margin when it means that the growers might not be there to supply your good bits.
So what would be one kind of plea that you would give to anyone listening?
It's a relationship. It's allies. It's, you know, if we bust a gut to get things to you in peak, I would like to see someone willing to run at 2.5 instead of 3, or you know, mark up. It's it's not just about their own performance when they rely so heavily on the supply chain. It's about sometimes you have to do something because it helps your ally. Or because you asked them to grow that many plants, then you need to find a way to get through that many plants. It's not just an option to just say no. And that wouldn't stand in any other industry. But there isn't room for contracts in horticulture because we could have a crop failure and be vulnerable in just the same way that they decide not to take X thousand of something and leave us vulnerable. But the good trust only has so much wiggle room. It's been a really hard one. And I think as much as any year, it's the most cynical I've been. Might have to rebrand as cynical plants.
Not so happy plants.
No, but I mean,
it's quite as catchy.
I think we've felt vulnerable because we've been through so much growth and put a lot of money on the line to build a new nursery.
Absolutely.
And you just think, oh, hang on, we've just meant that when we're stuck, we're bigger stuck.
Well, I think that absolutely wraps things up here, but it's been wonderful talking to both of you. Meg and Nat, thanks so much for coming to see us.
Food for thought as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so I'm here with Mark from Creative TV. Mark, how are you finding the show so far?
Very good, actually. We had a really good day yesterday. Lots of visitors, lots of new visitors as well. So, yeah, really good.
And it's an interesting business model you've got. I mean, it's not like anything else you see around the show. But it's really eye-catching.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's the whole point of it, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. So in-store TV promotion is there to sell product to a customer when they're actually in-store. So it catches their attention just as it's done for you today.
Right. So we're stood in front of this solar fountain display here, and you were telling me this is one of your best sellers at the minute, or most getting the most traction at the moment.
Yeah, well, currently over the summer it's been the best seller, but that will change because what we do is we change the products on that stand depending on the time of the year. So that product will change every 12 to 16 weeks.
Okay, so in the garden centre, you install the stand, but yet the product and the videos will be changed on a rotational basis, depending on the season.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so we've got solar fountain here. Just tell me about some of the other products that you've got.
Okay, so in the wintertime, we'll go to more Christmas-related products and gifting products because, you know, the garden centre's sort of trimmed back down on garden and more gift products come into store. So we actually do that and we mimic that on our display stands.
Okay. It's quite a wide array of products you've got. You source those from just worldwide? Or?
Yeah, we do. We go to China shows, but we actually work with other European companies that do TV promotions, so we work as a group.
Okay. And do you, because you create the videos and things, like, are you actually a video production company as well?
We are. We do it all in-house, yeah.
Fantastic. Well, just wish you all the best with the rest of the show.
Thank you.
Cheers, Mark.
Yeah, cheers. Thank you.
I am so thrilled to welcome onto the show today Kaz Edwards, who is the national sales manager for Heart of Eden.
Hi, amongst Kaz. Many things.
Hi, Kaz.
Hello, how are you?
Should have written it down. So, Kaz, maybe we could start by you, if you could share a little bit about your career journey in the garden care industry.
Of course, yes. It started about 17 years ago. Bizarrely.
Wow.
I'd been in recruitment for 5 years, which was very hard sales, and that kind of went south when the recession hit.
Okay.
So I decided to take a 2 month secondment temporary job at Miracle-Gro
as
seasonal staff. And that ended up lasting about 10 years.
Very seasonal.
Yeah. So I started very much in the sort of customer services, order processing, and then very quickly worked my way through to looking after key accounts, very much on the supportive logistics side.
Right.
And then by the time I left, I was looking after B&Q for Miracle-Gro.
Oh, wow. That's a biggie.
Which was huge, yes, in every sense, but fantastic. So I was with Miracle-Gro for 10 wonderful years and then moved over to Bordermona.
Okay.
Again, looking after B&Q and national accounts from that side. And really, since then, I've gone through to Southern Trident to where I am now at Heart of Eden. So it was more about growing media, horticulture. Horticulture, it's a fantastic industry, as we know, but it's growing media that's been the constant throughout.
Right. So, Kaz, last year you went through redundancy.
Yes.
Sorry to bring this up.
Yeah, no.
As we know, a tough experience for anyone. Mm. So how did you cope with that? And what role did the industry's kind of support play for you at the time?
Yeah, it was a shock, actually. as it always is.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's something that isn't personal, but it is emotional.
It
does feel it, absolutely. Yeah. I was supported by the company and certainly my boss. Steve Harper at the time, very supportive. But there is always that trepidation, isn't there? Is anyone going to need or want my skills?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the LinkedIn post went out at the beginning of the year, and genuinely, it was humbling, the response, and quite overwhelming I got from the industry, which was incredible.
Lovely.
And that wasn't just, there was supportive and emotional support, how are you doing, just checking in, hope everything's okay.
Yeah.
But also direct competitors, buyers, customers, there's a job here. Would you be interested?
Right.
And everyone linked up and put recommendations. So I was incredibly overwhelmed by the whole thing, I have to say, and felt very supported because it was a scary time. And I think, you know, the industry, we know that it's incestuous and everyone knows everyone else.
Yeah.
And that's one of its strengths, actually. And that really came to the fore for me personally.
So how long was it from kind of being made redundant to working with Heart of Eden?
I was on garden leave. Well, not garden leave. I was on 3 months' notice. So I finished in March and I started 2 weeks later with Heart of Eden beginning of
That's
April.
Incredible.
I didn't realize it was that soon.
I was very, very fortunate. And like I say, with the support with the industry, I was in a very in a fantastic position that I was able to choose a role that I wanted to go in.
Okay.
And whilst the companies that were offered to me were fantastic and would have been fantastic, mm-hmm. Heart of Eden, because of the growing media connection, passionate about sustainability and peat-free, yep. it just ticked every box. Yep. And I like to joke that they wanted someone with a growing media retail expert. They couldn't find someone, so they asked me to do it. But it felt like a really natural move. So yep. beginning of the year, absolutely lost and dejected.
Yep.
But actually, I've gone into a role where I feel that I'm doing some really good work and I love my job.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so really happy. Yeah.
Good news story.
That's really good to hear. So looking back, what did you feel that you've learned from that transition period that you carry with you now?
I think this is true, certainly again, of the industry, but I think in all work ethics, I think the way that you treat people through your career and your daily life mm-hmm. will pay you back in twofold.
Right. Back at you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, certainly from a sales perspective, you know, relationship building is incredibly important to what I do.
Yep.
And I hope that, you know, respectful, treating people honestly and being candid at all sure. times pays dividends. And I think that's what came back to me. So my advice to anyone is, you know, be aware of everybody that you interact with, yeah. whether it's the admin person, the receptionist, the sales director, yeah. and yeah. everyone in between, because you never know when those people are going to be able to support sure. and help
yeah.
you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we were talking a bit about that last night, weren't we?
We were,
you know, make sure you treat the person down below with as much respect as those, because as you go down and they come up.
100%, 100%, yeah.
So what advice would you give anyone in the industry who might be facing career uncertainty or big changes like the ones that you've experienced?
Be bold. You know, which is really difficult sometimes yeah. because like we were saying, it's an emotional yeah. and I wasn't always bold, you know, at times.
Yeah.
But it's don't be afraid to put yourself out there, because if you do, and I was nervous about putting the post out on LinkedIn.
Yeah, of course.
I was bold and the response came back in twofold, as I say. So I think, you know, don't be afraid to reach out. The industry is very, very giving and actually wants to help. And fundamentally, as humans, we deal with people and mm-hmm. that's what we do particularly well in horticulture. So, yeah, no, I would just say be bold, put yourself out
there.
Let
people know.
And you will be surprised. It will be paid back in spades. See what
fantastic.
I did there? Yeah. See what I did? Yeah.
So let's get round to where you are now. You are the National Account Manager at Heart of Eden. Can you tell us, I mean, you've told us a bit about the growing media, but what else was it about the company that drew you to it?
I think the main driver is it became really important to me over the last sort of few years of my career that sustainability and efficacy in growing media has been lacking in the last 2 years. And we know.
Yeah, we do.
With the peat-free argument, and it's not really an argument per se, it will come, but it's been rumbling on in the industry. What I loved particularly about Heart of Eden is that they've always been peat-free. So whereas some manufacturers of growing media are having to react to that change with varying degrees of successes, Heart of Eden have never had to make that adaptation. So there is all, you get sustainability, but you also get that efficacy. And one of my passionate sort of drivers is making sure that the consumer opens a bag of compost and it's going to be useful, it's going to be sustainable, and it's going to be effective. Because there's nothing worse, there's so much work and industry to get that bag of compost into that consumer's
absolutely.
Hands.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if it's substandard, if they plant their first-time gardener plants their tomato plant or their petunia or their hanging basket for the first time, if it doesn't grow, they've spent £30 on a pot, £10 on a plant.
Yeah, yeah.
And if it doesn't work, the compost, they will disengage and think, I can't garden. It's not for me.
Yeah,
I haven't
got
green fingers. Yep. So it was really important to me with Heart of Eden that actually we have a product that works, but it ticks that box. It gives back. It doesn't take away.
Right. Like that.
Yeah. So the transition to peat-free has been a huge thing in the industry, as you just said. But Heart of Eden hasn't had to go through that transition because you've always been peat-free.
Yep.
So how have customers been responding to your products?
I think well, very positive, is, you know, 100% positivity behind it, because I think that most consumers, and arguably most people in our industry, mm-hmm. have been disappointed with peat free. Yeah. And I think if we're all being really candid, it hasn't hit the mark for a number of years.
Right.
It is improving, definitely. Certainly, they don't necessarily know who Heart of Eden are, because right. we've been, for 25 years, we've been there on the commercial landscaping mm-hmm. side. But as yep. a brand, which was born out of the need in COVID, it's a relatively new brand.
Okay.
And there is a suspicion with peat-free
of course, yeah.
that, oh, mm-hmm. well, I don't like it, it doesn't work, well, for the reasons we've just mm-hmm. spoken
and,
about.
And I think there have been some new entrants into the market who really haven't quite hit the mark as well. So.
Indeed. And it almost puts things backwards in yeah. people's minds, which is detrimental to all of us,
mm.
certainly Heart of Eden. But one of the things that, particularly doing shows like Glee, when customers actually feel and see and look and use our compost, they are genuinely surprised. Obviously, we've got samples out at Glee at the moment.
Yeah, of course.
But it looks and feels like you want to put your hands in. I mean, one should always wear gloves when handling growing media. But, you know, with peat-based, you want to engage yeah. and be in with the soil. And you can do that with ours. It's not full of wood shavings. It's not smelly or mulchy. It is a good compost. And I think people are surprised by that. And also the how effective it is. It actually is a growing media. It is a compost, you know. And that shouldn't be a surprise to anyone, because they're coming to our retailers, all of these gardeners and consumers,
yeah.
expecting them to be the experts and sell them the tools they need to have a successful gardening mm-hmm. experience.
Yeah.
So from your perspective, what do you see as the biggest opportunities and the biggest challenges for garden care business in the next few years?
Well, I think the opportunities, we all have to be more sustainable. And I know it's something that is constantly sort of battened around.
Mm-hmm.
But given the industry that we're in, mm-hmm. we should be at the forefront of that movement. We,
yeah.
at the very least, all of us should be doing our part. Heart of Eden are already doing it, and we'll continue to do
yeah.
that. You know, it's just, you don't get less with that. You know, it's a constant thing. I think the challenge is obviously the peat ban coming, not mm-hmm. only
not
for
coming.
Or not coming. I think it will come, obviously, because retail has moved on. Certainly in the retail market
yeah.
has moved on, and for, you know, for a number of years. So it's definitely here to stay. So to resist and say, I will use peat until I can't, is a fair comment,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
but the reality is it will go.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say on record when I think
no,
that will be, because I don't think anyone
that.
Would. I think that's up to the King's speech, isn't it? So his job, not mine.
Yeah.
But, you know, it will be coming. So I think that it's how the industry traverses that change.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of us, myself included, it's not going to be a fundamental change in my day-to-day life. But I think for the industry,
yeah.
it will move forward. And it stretches to growers as well, because
yeah.
that will have a far-reaching impact.
Yeah. So you've mentioned a few times about the importance of sustainability.
Mm.
How important do you think it is that there's collaboration and support across the industry?
Yeah.
Especially as we move towards more sustainable practices, not
mm.
just with growing media, but just across the industry
yeah.
as a whole.
One of the key links, and this has certainly come to the fore in the last sort of few years, in my experience, particularly with peat free, is the need to feed your compost.
Okay.
You know, peat held things. You know, it's a fantastic growing media. That's why we've used it. But we need to move on from that. And one of the key things is that absolute need to feed the compost after you've planted,
right.
you know. And I think that's education from manufacturers. So we need to look at the fertilizers that we're using. How much potassium content is there?
Right.
I use Koya in my compost, which releases potassium. So the fertilizer that I'm using probably doesn't need to have a high K,
yep.
for example. But I think it's understanding that manufacturers need to convey that to retailers, and retailers need to support us and get that message out to consumers as well. For the aforementioned reason that we want gardeners to be successful. So, and again, fertilizer, not necessarily my expertise, but again, that has to be sustainable because you don't want a, an environmentally friendly growing media and then a load of mined minerals.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
You know, there has to be that balance. So I think there needs to be more work together across the channels within the industry, and also manufacturers, the responsible sourcing scheme, for example, is a great leveler. Take the commercials out of it, take the rivalry out of it. Let's actually unite, because we can all have different formulations that work, potentially. Mine's the better one, obviously, but, you know, fundamentally. But I think it's key to understand where we're getting those products from and be relatively unified across in that approach.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
And so apart from the responsible sourcing scheme, what other things do you feel could be done? Is it an education thing? And is that consumer, or is that consumer and retailer?
I think it's both. I think it's both. I think it would be really unfair to say that the onus is completely on the retailer. You know, they have a retail is hard. We know it's hard, whether you're an independent garden centre or whether you're a mass merchant, and trying to get that message across. I can sell into my buyer very, very simply and easy because I'm having a conversation with that person and I can do all the benefits and, you know, of my product to convey that into a retail agenda. I think that the manufacturer needs to support the buyer to get, whether that's point of sale, things like this, media. It's about getting that message out there. And I think that that's absolutely key. The message is key, but you have to do that as a collaboration with the retailers and the manufacturers.
Definitely. We were talking about that with Peter Burks from the Garden Centre Association, how important it is.
And they're the sort of forums, the GCA as well, that can actually advocate that kind of activity.
Absolutely.
So this year's Glee Show brings many, many brands, buyers and voices together. What's been your impression of the show this year?
It's been, every show is different. I think this is my 16th.
Right.
Glee. I know. Yeah, ages me. I was a child. What can I say? I think it's been, every Glee is slightly different. I have been quite busy because of the new job. I haven't really left the stand too much. But yeah, no, I think there's always that buzz. There's always that excitement. You know, I think this season's been, has gone well for the most retailers. So that's a positive. And manufacturers, the sun came out. So
it certainly did.
That always helps. Not so much for grass, but anyway. So I think that at this time of year, it's time for people to sort of take stock. And that's coming apparent. Okay, what worked this year? What didn't work last year? So
So have you actually spotted any trends or innovations here? You said you haven't been off the stand very much.
Not very much.
But have you spotted anything that's really excited you, or you thought, oh, that's interesting?
Well, not so much trends around Glee. As I say, I've been a slave to my stand. But actually, one of the points, sorry to keep going back to the peat-free, but very much the Tom with the conversation. 4 or 5 years ago, people would be presented with a peat-free and the instant reaction would be, I'm not using that.
Right.
I use peat, I don't do that. And dismiss it. The tone of the conversation has definitely changed. It's become very noticeable with Glee this year is, yes, I want to use peat-free, or I don't know what peat-free is. Can you tell me about it? So for me, that's incredibly encouraging. It's, you know, from the people, the diehards of no, through my dead fingers will I be using peat-free, to suddenly, right, okay, let's embrace this. So that's been the real change I've seen, or the difference this year. Yeah.
Okay, so what's next for Heart of Eden? Anything on the horizon that we should be watching out for?
I think for me and the business, we just want to get our name out there, funded. You know, I think we are pitched in the right format. I think we are a point of difference within the growing media market, which is competitive. I've no interest to take huge amounts of business, from the mainstays. But actually, I think for Heart of Eden, we'll be doing a lot more sort of PR, a lot more collaborations as well, because not everyone knows who we are. And I think we're amazing. And I'm incredibly proud, genuinely proud of what we do.
I love the branding.
Thank you.
I think it's very simple.
Yes, I can't take credit for that.
No.
But no, I think it's a nice clear messaging. It does what it's supposed to do. And I just, for us as a business, our strategy is to get it into consumers' hands, because we know once they start using it, they're going to be delighted with it.
You mentioned that you are a challenger brand. So what's the biggest challenge as a challenger brand that you're facing? Is it just being noticing and getting the name out there?
Yeah, I think so, because I think it's twofold. There are, you know, very established growing media brands out there that arguably have gone through formulation changes over the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. But they're not the same product, but consumers always buy them assuming it's going to be the same. And that's not always the case. There is also, as we mentioned earlier, there's been some peat-free in the market that has been substandard, I think it's fair to say.
Absolutely fair to say.
So that's something that we have to overcome, because I think there is an element of suspicion about someone new coming in.
Right.
As I say, for us, we've got 25 years experience, albeit not in the retail market. So it's we hopefully build that trust within the consumer.
Yeah. Well, Kaz, thank you so much for coming
to
join us today, telling us about your journey. And I'm glad it was a happy ending on that. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
And for just telling us a little bit more about Heart of Eden as well. It's been really interesting. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Please do subscribe, like, and review us on your podcast platform of choice. It only takes a moment, and it helps us to make this podcast possible. If you found the episode useful, do spread the word and share it with your colleagues. Signing up to our mailing list at theunderground.fm will mean that you'll receive insights and news all about new episodes straight to your inbox. The Underground Podcast is produced by Wright O'Barra, a creative marketing agency for home and garden brands. The production at Glee doesn't happen without a team of people behind it. So my thanks goes to Matt Meehan and Katerina Albanese from the Glee team for their help and assistance. Technical production was by Paul Withers, and their production assistant was Josh Wright. On-site videography was by Ben Holmes. And graphic design and marketing support was by Claire Appleby. The podcast booth was constructed with the support of Toby Noyce of Extreme Graphics. And of course, my thanks goes to my brilliant co-host, Kate Turner, the Gardener Guru. Thanks for listening.